This is Digital Story Podcast number 918, October 24th, 2023. Today's theme is A Scary Night Out with the Nikon ZF. I'm Derek Story. I'd been testing the Nikon ZF for a week when I landed the ultimate low-light torture test, opening night publicity shots for a commercial haunted house. When we were working out the details of the assignment, the client warned me, "It's going to be dark, very dark." With the ZF in hand, I replied, "Bring it on." What happened on that frightful night is the lead story in this week's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Most people would probably think I was insane. Who in their right mind would accept a virtual darkness photo shoot with a brand new camera and only a few lenses? And when I say only a few lenses, I mean three. I must admit, I was a bit nervous beforehand, but as you know, I always am. So here's what I was armed with. The Nikon ZF mirrorless camera with 40mm f2.0 lens. Now, when you see the camera, when you see a picture of the camera, it has the letter Z and then a small F, but it's pronounced the ZF. And then the f2.0 lens, the 40mm lens, that is available in a kit with the camera. That's one of the options. And it is what they call a special edition lens. So it has that classic Nikon look, and it's a very good value as well. I also had the FTZ2 adapter, and that's a Nikon adapter, and that allows me to use my previous Nikon F-mount lenses with the ZF. Now, I had two that work with autofocus. So the latest Nikon F lenses, the G series, the AFS series, will work with autofocus and all functionality. It's just like you have a Z mount lens on there, but you're using one of the lenses you probably already have. Now, I have two of those lenses, the 50mm f1.8G, and that came with my Nikon D610, a camera I still have. I've just never been able to let go of it because there are certain situations where it works really great. And then I also have the Nikon 24-85mm G, and that's another AFS zoom lens that worked fantastic with the Nikon D610 and also works very well with the FTZ adapter. So that was kind of my trio, the 40mm prime, the 50mm prime, and then the zoom lens 24-85. And you'd probably think, well, there isn't that much difference between the 40mm and the 50mm. Well, if you actually put the lenses on the camera and sort of look through the viewfinder and measure the width, the field of view, there's actually a substantial difference between the two. So I like the 50mm a little bit more for portraits and getting tight on things, and the 40mm gives me a little bit more elbow room. The ZF came with one battery, and it's a decent battery. About 360, 380 shots, they say, with that battery. It doesn't come with a separate charger, but you can use the included USB-C cable, and you have to provide your own, you know, little charging brick too, but, you know, most of us have one or more of those by now. And you can charge the battery inside the camera. However, when I was looking at the battery for the camera, I was going, that looks a lot like the battery for my D610. And in fact, it is the same shape, the same body, same contacts. It's just not quite as powerful as the one that comes with the ZF. But it works. And I put it in the ZF and it fired up and took pictures. The exposures were great. And the D610 also came with a charger that charged both batteries, the D610, obviously, and the newer one for the ZF. So suddenly, I had two batteries and an external charger. That really made me happy, I have to tell you. I love that. Let's get to the shoot itself. I had done some testing with all the lenses in daylight, right? And, you know, so I went out walking with the, you know, 24 to 85 on there with the adapter and seeing how the autofocus worked and seeing how the exposures worked. And broad daylight, everything was working out really well. It's just like, wow, this is just like having a native lens on the camera using this adapter. I was super impressed. And the situation was the same for the 50 millimeter lens. So I was feeling pretty good. You know, I've got the 40 on there. I've got the other two lenses. The maximum aperture for the zoom lens at 24 millimeters is f3.5. So not the fastest thing in the world, but not too bad. It was workable. And remember, if you didn't know this already, I should say, the ZF has this incredible high ISO performance, which I'm going to get into here in a few minutes. So I said, okay, combine the high ISO. It has 5-axis stabilization built into the camera. Nikon had it rated at up to 8 stops. 8 stops of stabilization with that in camera. And I'm going, wow, okay, that's pretty good. So I said, you know what? I can do this shoot. In fact, it'll be a great test. Everything was sort of lined up and I was ready to go. Had a nice little low pro bag with my little lenses in there and the camera in there. I kept the D610 with me. I put it in the car just in case things went awry. I could, you know, pull out that body and do some work. Off to the haunted house I go. Now, the way they had this set up was that this was opening night and they're having me come an hour and a half before the doors actually open to do the publicity shots, you know, with all the actors with their makeup on, you know, the sets are finished, you know, all that. Everything was ready to go. And I was going to come in there, do the publicity shots that they use to promote the haunted house from now through Halloween on social, on their webpage, all that stuff. And this is very important to them, these shots, very important to them, because if you see these characters, these actors who are really good, and you see these sets and you see a little bit of what you're going to experience inside the haunted house, then you're going, wow, this looks kind of cool. This looks professional. This isn't just some, you know, place where they hang up a few spider webs and, you know, and that kind of stuff. This is the real deal. It's like Disneyland quality. And by the way, the name of the haunt is Blind Scream Haunted House in Santa Rosa, California. And I have a link to it in the show notes. I'm telling you, if you're in the North Bay, if you're in the Bay Area at all, this thing is worth going through. It is fantastic. I have watched this project evolve over the years. I've done this assignment for them prior. It's been a few years, and it's amazing how much has changed since the last time I was the photographer for them. So anyway, we're ready to go. So I show up on time. I've got my little low pro bag. I've got my camera and 3 lenses. And my thinking was, I'm going to go in with the 40 millimeter because, you know, it's a native Z mount lens. It's F2. And, you know, I know it's going to work. I know it's going to work. So I navigate to the giant green room where all the actors are getting ready. First thing, when I walked in there, I could tell that this was more than just opening night jitters. The air was thick. The air was thick. And I found my client, who is one of the co-creators of this haunted house. She and her partner have built this thing, and you know, he's sort of the technological brains behind it and the artist behind it and the carpenter behind it, and she is the event mastermind behind it, you know, the business side of it, and they work very well together. So I get in there, I find her, I could tell that wow, things are maybe a little behind schedule, I was thinking. And she's going right away, she goes, okay, things are a little out of sorts right now. My co-founder isn't here. He's sick, and he's the brains behind all the operations. He's the one that makes sure that all the technology works correctly. He's the one that knows where all the levers are. He can't come tonight. He's sick. He's really sick. And our lead makeup artist is in here. She is sick as well. And then a few other people were sick. So you can imagine, here she is trying to do opening night, trying to get the publicity shots taken care of. And she is super shorthanded. I said, okay, fine. We'll just go through and, you know, we're going to get you shots. We're going to get you shots. And I said, you know, with this great confidence, carrying a brand new camera I'd never used in this situation before at all. But I wasn't going to add to her pain at that moment. She did have a shot list and she had someone to take me through. But actors are still getting ready. Everything's a little behind schedule. And I wasn't able to start as early as we had hoped. And when I finally got the start, I did not have very much time. So this was going to be a fast photo shoot in addition to a challenging photo shoot. The first shot was in kind of this entry area, and it was dark, but not too dark. And I had a little elbow room. I had the 40 millimeter on there, and I did the first series of shots with the 40 millimeter. They looked good on the viewfinder, and I'm feeling pretty good. Okay, all right, we're off to a good start. I'm just going to breeze through this thing. My contact, my helper, takes me to the next room. He knows where everything is. And he has the shot list. He takes me to the next room, and it is super tight. It is super tight. And it is even darker than where we were on the first shot. And I'm going, okay, all right, too tight for me to use the 40 millimeter. And I'm going, oh, man. So I knew I was going to have to pull out the 24 to 85 with the adapter and use that. As it worked out, I ended up using that for the rest of the shoot. So suddenly, I'm not feeling quite as confident as I was just a few minutes ago. I'm using an adapted lens on an adapter. I have no idea how it's going to focus in this kind of situation. Here we go. So I get it on there, 24 millimeters. I set it to 24 millimeters, wide open. We do the second shot. I'm looking on the viewfinder, and it's looking pretty good. Now, we all know how the viewfinder can, you know, mislead us, right? They can look great on the viewfinder, and then you put them on a computer screen, and they're a blurry mess. And you go, what? They look great on the viewfinder. Well, okay, so I was hoping it wasn't that. But already my ISO was climbing. I set it on auto ISO with parameters topping out at 25,600. That was, I said, you know, that's as far as I'm willing to go here. It would go another stop. And it was already climbing halfway there. I think the first one we were at 12,000 or so ISO, wide open, a 15th of a second. Looks good. The thing that I noticed when I was looking at the LCD of the ZF is that the dynamic range was really impressive because I didn't have time to really fool around with the metering. So, you know, there's bright things and there's dark things. You know, it's a haunted house, you know, all in the same scene. And it was handling both of them. I was shooting in RAW plus JPEG. So I knew I was going to have the RAW files. And I had already tested the latest version of Lightroom Desktop. And it could read those RAW files. So I knew that I had RAW and that I had an application that could read those files and I could work with them. I'm shooting away and the Nikon's able to focus. In this situation, it had to use the AF assist light, but it was focusing really well, very accurately and quickly, even with the adapter and the adapted lens on there. So we go to the next room. The next room was even darker and even tighter. And I'm going, oh my God, I'm going down Dante's Inferno here, you know, and each ring, you know, gets more challenging, hotter, so to speak. And so now I was shooting at 25,600. And on this shot, this was actually one of the darkest rooms. On this shot, I was at ISO 25,600, f3.5, 24 millimeters. I was at 1/6 of a second. I wasn't willing to go any higher on the ISO. 1/6 of a second, like 1/6. And I was going, oh boy, I hope this IBIS is pretty good. They said 8 stops of stabilization. I'm going to hold them to that. I pulled that shot off. Again, it looked good. And now we're just like burning through the haunted house because we're not too long away from opening night, right? And so everyone's lined up outside. You know, the line is all the way out to the street. All this stuff is going on. Everyone's running around. It's nerve-wracking. We're trying to round people up. We're doing the shots. One room, bang. Next room, bang. Next room, bang. Just like that. I mean, just rolling through this. I did not have time to fool around with the settings. I put the camera in program mode. I set the boundaries on the ISO. I was just crossing my fingers and hoping for the best. So we get through the shoot. We come out the other side. And I walk outside afterwards. And they're all, hey, we're very excited. So glad you could come. Can't wait to see the shots. And I'm thinking, yeah, neither can I. I'm outside and like, there's like a ton of people out there. I mean, this is a big deal. It was rock and roll time. I was a little tired because of the stress and everything. And a haunted house is not easy to navigate, you know, especially when you're a tall guy. You know, you can't just like run through this thing like people who know it inside and out. So I get out to my car after the shoot and I'm thinking, do I want to look at these pictures on the LCD right now? Or do I just want to wait till I get home? And I decided to wait because I didn't want any false hope from the LCD. Or if something really went bad, I didn't want to know yet. Sort of, you know, going, I'm just going to wait till I get home and look at it in Lightroom. So I get home. First thing I do when I get home that night is I have like two glasses of water because I was just parched from this photo shoot. And I wasn't able to carry anything with me other than my camera in the bag. And I load the photos up using Lightroom Desktop. And, you know, they start coming in off the card. And I'm just watching them. I'm looking at them and I'm going, no, this can't be right. Because the images in Lightroom on my MacBook Pro M1 looked even better than they did on the back of the camera. And that LCD on the back of the camera is a darn good LCD. It's beautiful. Shot after shot after shot looked fantastic. They were sharp. I did not have one misfocused shot from the whole shoot. Not one misfocused shot. I didn't have any shots where the light meter blew it. And I mean, we're dealing with tough situations here, you know, super darks and lights and everything. The light meter just magically found the right way to expose the shots. The colors hung in there, even at ISO 25,600, the colors hung in there, even the reds. You know how reds can go crazy on you, especially in this sort of situation. The reds even hung in there. And I was amazed. I mean, my jaw dropped, literally dropped. I just took the biggest sigh of relief I think I have in a while on a photo shoot. I said, I'm not doing anything else. I'm just going to close up the laptop, going to try to wind down a little bit and get some sleep. Next day, I open it up and I start looking at the shots and thinking, what do I have to do to them? And I go, I don't think I have to do this much. And I ended up having to make basically four adjustments in Lightroom Desktop to every shot. I would adjust the tone a little bit still. Sometimes I'd brighten things up a bit or, you know, open up shadows just a hair, you know, things like that, mostly to taste. I didn't have to do any color adjustment at all. No, zero color adjustment at all. I would add a little bit of clarity just to kind of, you know, give it a little bit more punch. And then on a few of the shots that were in super dark situations, I ran the noise reduction in Lightroom Desktop on the shots. Talk about a nice tool. They, you know, Lightroom has done such a great job with that tool. And it took a good shot and just like made it look like it was shot at ISO 400. I mean, really, it was just craziness. The shoot was a wild success. I mean, it was an unbridled success. And I'm thinking that if this camera can survive this shoot and do this well with as little input as possible from the photographer, I mean, I just set boundaries on the settings and then had the camera carry the ball for me. You know, it's a beautiful camera. It has a Nikon FM aesthetic. It's well made. I mean, it's just beautifully made, you know, brass, magnesium, chrome plated, all that stuff. It's gorgeous. But the insides of that camera were truly impressive. And this is shooting with adapted lenses. So I have to say that the Nikon ZF is the real deal. And if you're an existing Nikon shooter, and that means, you know, from the DSLR days, and you still have some of your G series lenses, you know, the latest round of autofocus lenses for the DSLR, if you spend the $225 or so on the FTZ2 adapter, I like it better because it looks better because it doesn't have the tripod mount on it. You basically have a legitimate kit, depending on how many lenses you have. If you have batteries from, you know, recent Nikons, they'll work in the ZF. I mean, really, what you're looking at is the camera, and I would get the 40 millimeter lens. So that kit is about $2,300 and something. And then the adapter, and basically for $2,500, you're out the door with a full frame state-of-the-art kit with a really nice looking camera, leveraging batteries and lenses and even lens hoods and stuff that you already have. So I was just super impressed with it. Nikon has knocked it out of the park with this. It was a frightful night with the Nikon ZF, but boy, what a happy ending. Canon Japan formally discontinues the last EOS M cameras, saying goodbye to EFM. And you can read this entire article on DP Review. I have a link to it in the show notes. And they refer also to Petapixel. Petapixel, I think, was the originator of this article. And that's at petapixel.com. Let me read you what they wrote. Well, the writing has been on the wall for a while, but Canon Japanese website has finally confirmed the end of the EFM system, or at least is describing all the EFM camera models as being discontinued. Canon USA told Petapixel, quote, "At present, sales of EOS M series cameras and EFM lenses vary from region to region depending on user needs," end quote. But the confirmation that sales have stopped in Canon's home market, where the EOS M models sold particularly well, tells a fairly clear story. The EFM system, Canon's first foray into mirrorless cameras, was a compact APS-C mirrorless system that could use EF and EFS DSLR lenses via an adapter, but its own lenses could only be used on EFM bodies. The range extended from some of Canon's smallest, most affordable, beginner-friendly ILCs up to the enthusiast-focused M5 and M6 models. The relatively small lens range reflected this focus, with a handful of variable aperture zooms supplemented by three relatively compact primes. The arrival of the RF mount undermined confidence in the future of the system, and the launch of the APS-C RF models essentially spelled the end for EFM. The R cameras sacrificed some of the compactness of the EOS M modes and currently have fewer APS-C and APS-C appropriate lens options, but give buyers the confidence that Canon is committed to the lens system. To some degree anyway, Canon doesn't have a great history of fleshing out its APS-C systems, perhaps in the hope of upselling people to its full-frame cameras and, unlike with EFM, has been actively blocking third parties from doing so. But regardless of where we stand and how we got here, it seems that, after 11 years, Canon has turned a page on the first chapter of its mirrorless camera story. So, as it was said in the article, I agree. I mean, this writing has been on the wall, especially when the APS-C models came out for the R mount. You're kind of going, all right, I see what's going on here. I get it. I'm sure it's a little tough for EFM photographers that have that gear. It still works, obviously, and the lenses they have are the lenses they have. I think the hard part about it is the lack of flexibility. I was just talking in the prior story how wonderful it was to be able to repurpose my lenses from an older system to a brand new camera and have everything work great. I've done the same thing with a Pentax as well, and you know, that works very well. So that is nice, being able to do that. But you know, technology changes. Canon, as you recall, you know, moved away from the F mount completely to a whole different mount for their autofocus cameras. And you know, a lot of, you know, F mount photographers are going, what the heck, you know, we can't use our lenses on this camera. And Canon said, yes, because if we want to create the sort of autofocus camera we really want and that we think you want, we have to do this radical change. So they're not afraid to do this sort of thing. And it looks like, you know, they're, again, going to bite the bullet on EFM. And it's been a good run for EFM, 11 years. They kind of got the ball rolling in mirrorless for Canon. And the end of a chapter, right? Ricoh makes official statement on its film camera project. It's not what we expected. You can read this entire story on digitalcameraworld.com. And I did report on earlier stories about this project. Here's an update. It turns out that film photography lovers may not be getting quite as spoiled as was previously thought. It was recently stated by a Ricoh employee that four new Pentax film cameras are coming next year, including two SLRs. However, this timeline might not come to fruition, as Ricoh has now made an official statement that will pour water on this film camera fire. Quote, "We found information on several websites regarding our film camera development," reads the statement. "This included two compact film cameras for spring 2024, as mentioned by a colleague working for Ricoh Imaging Europe. This is not our official remark, nor is it based on any fixed information. We are indeed challenging the development of a compact film camera. However, we have not yet decided whether or when we will launch such a product," end quote. While this does leave a big question mark for me, and clearly there are some communication issues, and although this could have been a blunder, it does raise suspicion over the whole project, which we haven't really had a substantial update since May 2023, which is 5 months as of the writing of this article. Who knows what the future will hold for the Pentax and its reveal of film cameras, but if you're in the market for a new-to-you film camera, then we highly recommend checking out our best film camera guide. While you're in there, take a look at our best 35mm film or best 120 film guides to keep your film supply in stock. In other words, you're still going to be using the same film camera you probably already have. I think this does more than pour a little water on the fire. I think this puts out the fire, honestly. That was a fairly strong statement that did not leave a whole lot of wiggle room. They were exploring, and they were seriously exploring. There was even a video about how they were tapping the knowledge of Pentax engineers who had built some of their best film cameras, and they were bringing them into the fold and picking their brains and all that kind of stuff. There was a lot of excitement around this, and that wasn't just our imagination. There truly was. However, I have a feeling that the accounting department got involved and they started taking a look at what this would require. Probably don't have the development budget for this sort of project, and I have a feeling that it's just going to go away altogether. We may never hear much about it again. So, sad news if you're counting on a new Pentax film camera. I was intrigued by the idea. I've got a nice collection of Pentax lenses. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be fun to have a brand new Pentax film camera that had some kind of state-of-the-art stuff going on, but yet had the retro design? Hey, a little bit like the ZF, but it only turned around the other way. But honestly, after this report, I just don't think it's going to happen. Before I stick every little virtual camera club news, first of all, I want to thank our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast in this community month in and month out. I think the great thing about physical workshops is that I get to meet our Inner Circle members face to face. I get to hang out with them. I get to go out in the field and take pictures with them, get to go out to dinner with them. And when I do that, every time that I do that and spend some time with the Inner Circle, it just reminds me of how great these people are. You know, these are the folks that literally support this podcast. These are the folks that are so passionate about photography that they actually are willing to pony up $5 a month to support the community that they love. And I just think that it's fantastic. And I want to thank our Inner Circle members. I try to treat you well in return. I try to provide you with discounts. And we have a site just for you guys, to guys and gals to hang out, share ideas and photos and so forth. But honestly, I just have to acknowledge what a wonderful group of folks this is. And I think that if you joined the Inner Circle, you would have the same feeling that I do. And if you want to learn more about it, there's a Patreon tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. You can click on it, take a look around, and maybe you will join this fantastic group of artists, the Inner Circle. Thank you so much, and I hope to see you as part of it in 2023. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. So I'm getting ready to fire up the printer because I've got some great images, some images I really like from the Sedona workshop. And I want to print some of them because I want to see how they look on paper. And I've done a little playing with some of them. I have some really terrific black and white. I have some nice stuff from the iPhone 15 Pro Max. Of course, I had my Olympus OM-1 and my Fujifilm X100V, and I've got some terrific shots from that. And it was just such a fantastic environment to work in, just so fresh and unique and vibrant that I think some of the prints from that workshop are really going to make me happy. And then I've also worked out a set of fine art cards. I've picked 6 images that look very nice together. They're going to make a fantastic set of cards, and I'm going to put some of those together. And I think that the fine art cards will make excellent holiday gifts. So I got all this swirling around in my head. My point being that now is the time to get your supplies together and to start getting your printing projects together if you plan on sharing some of your work during the holidays as gifts with friends and family. There's a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story, Red River Paper tile. You can click on that to get started. And remember, they also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. A fantastic supplier of knowledge, of paper, of ink, and all the accessories that you need to see your project from start to finish. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. What a great time I had in the haunted house with an Nikon ZF. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, be safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.